alcoholic. Nothing's changed, except I'm in better shape this week than I was last week, because I did all my studying yesterday and then left my books in the car so I wouldn't forget them again. All right, let me just read last paragraph in step 8. Whenever our pencil falters, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by remembering what AA experience in this step has meant to others. This is the one where you make a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. It is the beginning of the end of isolation from our fellows and from God. And in 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Above all, we should try to be absolutely sure that we are not delaying because we are afraid. For the readiness to take the full consequences of our past acts and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time is the very spirit of step 9. Okay, now we're on step 10. All right, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. As we work the first 9 steps, we prepare ourselves for the adventures of a new life. But when we approach step 10, we commence to put our AA way of living to practical use day by day, in fair weather or foul. Then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions? Okay, now, my notes. We have emotional hangovers from negative emotions such as anger, fear, jealousy, and so forth. And you know, there's a woman in the room tonight, so I can talk about it because she's here. A few weeks ago, I wasn't having a good day, and I'm not making any excuses for myself, because what I did was totally unacceptable. I lashed out at her, and what I should have done was just walk out the door, got in my car, and went home. Because at that point in time, I had let things get to me so much that I had no choice. That defect of character came out, and it took me, I knew when I went to bed that night that I'd done it. I was very sorry I did it. It took me 2 days to call her. I was so ashamed. And I did. And I called her and told her how sorry I was. And, you know, we can't afford that. We just can't afford it. That's why we have to stay in a spiritual mode at all times, or else what happened to me will happen to any one of us if we're having a bad day. And we do have bad days. But that's the time that we pick up the phone and we call somebody and talk to them and get past whatever's going on with us, and say a prayer and stay in the house that night. Then that way you won't be giving anybody any problems. All right, if someone hurts us, are we entitled to be mad? These are dangerous acceptance. And I'll read a quote on page 90 where it says, "We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it." We cannot justify anything, because no matter whether someone hurt us or we hurt someone, we can't hold on to the resentment. In reviewing our day before we go to bed at night, and this is me, this is what I do. If something sticks out that happened with me at fault, I immediately make amends when I can, like the next morning. And the quote from the Big Book is, "Love and tolerance is our code." If someone else did something to me, I initially pray for them. If it is possible, I talk to them about it. I have a garbage can. I used to have a garbage can at work. Remember that garbage can? And it was a little one, just a little one. And if I came to work in the morning and I had something on my mind that was keeping me from doing my job, I wrote it all down on a little piece of paper. I abbreviated it so that it wouldn't be like a, you know, a biography. But I just, you know, wrote it down, initialized it, and wrote down what my problem was, what my resentment was, or my fear, or my anger, or whatever it was. And I folded it all up, and I put it in this garbage can, and I put a lid on the top of it. And over time, when I did that, the problem was gone. Because I would say to myself, the problem's in the garbage can. If I want to take it out, I'll just open the garbage can. In the meantime, it's there. And when you get tools like that and you use them, eventually they begin to work. Okay. Stop making unnecessary demands. Show kindness when we have shown none. For people we didn't like, practice justice and courtesy. And that's a hard one too, but if we can do that, you know, I had a boss that I didn't like at all, and he was not a very nice boss. But I prayed for him, and the day came, and I was always courteous to him, no matter what he said to me. I guess he didn't think women belonged in the workplace, or if they were in the workplace, they didn't belong in the position that I was in. So he was not very nice. Well, what happened was I prayed for him. I was always courteous to him, and I would look at him as a poor, suffering person. And then one day, the women that worked for me went to the big boss, the accounting manager, the CFO, and told him what was going on. And I did not know they were doing that. I never knew that they heard how he was talking to me. And they went to him, and he removed him and put him in another department. And I was very grateful for that. I don't know what would have happened had I had to continue to work under those conditions, because I had to work. I had to work. Whatever our wrongs we commit during the day, we need to see and understand. We need to recognize that we did act or think badly. Try to see what we could have done differently. Ask God's help to carry these differences into the next day. Always make amends if it hasn't already been done. The tenth step is about living life on a daily basis. Living life on life's terms, one day at a time. And so things crop up. Dealing with them in our steps, we have become willing to change, recognize our defects of character, and ask God to remove them. He does so in many different ways, and when each shows up, we come to immediately recognize it, usually by acting as if, and in most cases, having to make amends. That didn't make any sense. By acting, and in most cases, having to make amends. Does that make any sense to anybody in this room? All right, well, what it's saying is, this is from my head, so I was writing pretty fast. When our character defect shows up and we come to immediately recognize it, we need to do something about it. You know, we need to make amends right then if we can, or make a note that this is what we have to do. It could be in a telephone conversation. You might have been rude to somebody. Sitting on a pedestal for today, looking down on people. And as soon as you recognize that, which in a review of your day, if you're in a good spiritual condition, you will see that something went wrong and you need to take care of it. As we grow spiritually and continue on our path of sobriety, these defects get further and further away. But they will come back if we let up on our recovery program. Living the steps every hour of every day becomes so ingrained we don't even realize it. All right, now I'm going to write two pages, or two endings, and then I'm going to talk a little bit. And then it'll be your turn. Okay, now, page 85 in the big book. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. And don't let this discourage you tonight. This is each new day is a new beginning. And each one of us in this room only have today. And it doesn't matter how long we're sober, we only have today. So don't be intimidated by what I'm reading tonight. Okay, good. Okay, very good. You are in the same place as we are. You're sober today. Okay, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God. And you too, Pete. I love you, Pete. Okay. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Now that's in the big book. And then in the 12 and 12, to sum that up, having so considered our day, not omitting to take due note of things well done, and having searched our hearts with neither fear nor favor, we can truly thank God for the blessings we have received and sleep in good conscience. And that's what we strive for on a daily basis, is to go to bed, put our head on the pillow, and go to sleep. And if there's anything that we should have done that day and we didn't do, then we better think about it and figure out a way how we're going to fix it. And the sooner the better. And, you know, that's what the big book talks about and the 12 talks about. They go in detail about our defects and how they affect us and what we can do when something crops up that we have to take care of. This is our spiritual maintenance, and we have to do it. We have to do it. There is no must, they say in AA, but you better do it. Because this is a spiritual program, and as we grow in the program, we become more and more and more aware of the things that are going on in our lives that shouldn't be. The people that are in our lives that shouldn't be in our lives. And it's pretty hard sometimes to walk away. I just had a conversation with somebody a day or two ago about someone that would not accept an amend. They wouldn't do it. They aren't alcoholics. They wouldn't do it. And it was someone that was important to this person's life. And I said, close the door. Close the door. He's an Al-Anon person, and he tried his very best to help somebody in his own family. And that person rejected it. And so I said, you have to close the door. You can't keep trying to change somebody else. You can only change yourself. And anything that we say to another person, they don't understand what we're saying if they're not spiritually in the mood to hear it. And so closing the door is the best thing that we can do. And I don't know if I told you before when I'm talking about the steps, because, you know, one does run into the other. You know, we do live all 12 steps. We can become powerless over anything. And, you know, once the alcohol is gone, we're not powerless over alcohol anymore, but we sure are powerless over other things. And so we have to go through the rest of the steps to find out what we can do to change that powerlessness. And if that's over another human being, then we talk about it. We say what we have to, we hear what we need to hear, especially from our sponsor or someone else who's been through what we went through. That's always another good thing. I always tell girls I sponsor, if it didn't happen to me, then I don't know how they feel or what they can do. But I can send them to someone else who went through what they're going through. And in that case, they go to that person. That person shares what she went through, and so they learn. And, you know, I always say anything in this program that happens to us becomes a gift because we can share it with somebody else. You know, we don't have to... there's always somebody that we can share ourselves with. And take Paul in the back of the room there. He's got a wonderful gift of blindness. He's a beautiful human being. Goes to meetings. I think he's leading. I heard that he was leading somewhere. And maybe I should tell him, where are you leading, Paul?
I'm not sure the lead yet.
Okay. Okay.
There's still one other one.
Yes. But there are, you know, there are people in the program that are blind, and I would not be able to talk to them about blindness. I couldn't even imagine. I've never lost a child, and so I can't even imagine the pain of losing a child. So these are, you know, and good sponsorship will direct that person and not try to be somebody that that knows all. And I've never been that person. Sometimes I forget what I'm doing. So at any rate, I was going to tell you a little story. I was sober 13 years. And my mother and I had never come to an agreement. You know, she lived with an alcoholic until he died. She never went to Al-Anon, and so therefore didn't know that she should be looking at herself and changing who she was instead of trying to change me. And it didn't work, and she hurt me very badly one time. And so I wrote her a letter and explained to her in the letter how hurt I was, and I closed the door because I knew it wasn't going to make any difference to her, but it was going to make a difference to me. So I closed the door on my mother, and it came to a point where she was walking out of Loblaws. It was Loblaws then, and I was walking in, and we just ignored each other's presence. And then maybe a year or so later, I don't know who it was, could have been Abby, I said, oh, my mother's birthday's coming up. And they said, well, why don't you go and buy her a gift? And by that time, I thought, well, I guess I could do that. By that time, enough time had gone by and I prayed and the anger was gone and I talked about it enough. And so at any rate, I did. I went and bought her a ceramic rose because she loved ceramics. And I put it in her doorway along with a birthday card. And she called me when she got the present and the card and thanked me and cried. And my mother died in my arms. When she was dying, she came to live with Ron and I for a couple of months. And I was there when she took her last breath. And so that was a wonderful thing, that my mother and I were able to connect, and that she stopped trying to change me. And maybe she didn't try to change herself, but she didn't give me a hard time anymore about life. And so that was a good thing. That was the biggest thing that happened to me in sobriety, was the relationship that I developed with my mother before she passed. And of course, when we, we live in, there is a book that I read every morning, and I was going to bring it tonight and read it because it's so Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't, because that wouldn't be the right thing to do. But I'm going to give you the name of the book, and I'm going to carry it with me for a few days. But the reading for yesterday and the reading for today were really letting go and letting God. And that was the bottom line of both days on how to do that spiritually. It's not a religion. It's just a book like the 24-hour book or the other one. Yes, Daily Reflections. But it goes a little deeper than those two do. And as we're sober a while, we do need to get deeper into our relationship with God. And that, of course, comes with the 12th step, which we're going to talk about in 2 weeks, where we practice these principles in all our affairs. And so I'm done. I don't think I have any more to say about what the 10th step is. So if anybody has any questions or has any comments, please feel free to do so.
Thank you, Beverly. At this juncture, then, what I'll do is I'll go around the room and anybody has a question for Beverly. This is like Jeopardy. I will be here to provide it.
No questions? I certainly didn't cover it all.
Did you mention the name of the book? Or?
The book that I'm reading on a daily basis, it's called Unity. Daily Word, that's right, I'm sorry. I just, Deb and I just connected a few weeks ago, and I told her about the book, and she reads it. And it is a very good book, isn't it, Deb? It's not religious at all. It's really like AA. What's that, Joe? Daily Word. Yes. You get it through the mail. I have an address. I can give it to you. It's a very good, very, very good program. Yes. Oh, okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Beverly. Always a pleasure. Does this part go along with the 10th step when something's happened to you and you feel that you can't get it out of your head, somebody caused some thing, you know, and you have a resentment,
yep,
and you're just pissed off about it?
Yep.
So you pray for,
yep,
them?
Yep.
For 2 weeks?
Yep.
Isn't that what it says in the big book?
It could do that. You could
pray part, is this part of the 10th? Would this be part of the 10th step?
Yeah, I guess it could be. Sure. You have to get rid of the resentment, and praying is one of the things that you have to do. And in some cases, if it's a really deep hurt, it probably would take 2 weeks. But I've heard many, many times, and people stand from the podium and say that they've had a resentment, and it was an awful resentment, and they were told to pray for the person, and they didn't know how they were going to do that, and their sponsor said, do it. And so he did it, and a couple of weeks later, he started to get rid of the resentment. There wasn't any way that he could explain to the person that he had a resentment against. So therefore, he had to get a comfort zone inside of him. And so that when he did see this person, he could at least be nice. Courteous, I think that's what the 12 and 12 says. Courteous. Mm-hmm. And yes, you just have to keep praying for them.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I have a question. Beverly, do you do anything differently when the resentment is against like an organization or institution versus a specific person? Like, I have this big resentment against the healthcare system right now.
What?
Shocker, I know. But it's just like a decision was made that went against me, and I just can't shake it. I keep telling myself that the other person must have needed it worse than me. So there's that.
Yeah, that's right.
But I can go into this whole spin, you know. Then, you know, I start going down the vortex of, you know, the healthcare system, you know, just the whole thing. And it's not really a person.
No, it's the
but
system.
Yes, exactly, the system.
Mm-hmm. It's the system. Yes, I've come into that many times. I'm sure a lot of us in this room have. What you have to do is come to acceptance that. Accept the things you cannot change. You know, it's like the Serenity Prayer. Accept the things you cannot change. You cannot change the healthcare system. The courage to change the things I can, you can change you. And the wisdom to know the difference. Are you helping you, or are you trying to change? Are you trying to change you, or are you trying to change them? And how I always end up is that it must have been God's will for me not to get involved in whatever it was that I should have been involved in and wasn't. I always say, if it wasn't supposed to happen now, And, you know, so many of us say, I want this, and I want that, and I want to get this, and I want to get that. And we don't get it. Well, why not? You know, because it's all it says, probably in the Bible, and all you have to do is ask God, and you get it. Well, it's in His time, not our time. And His time may be a lot of years away. So we just learn how to live in today and accept this is the way it is, but God is with us. He is with us. He's in us. He lives in us. And He's directing our lives. And so He has something else for you to do so that you won't be involved in this system. And the day will come and you'll see it. You know, it's like I said to someone not too long ago, her son had died 13 years ago. And we went to see a movie, and in the movie there was the child that died had what her son had. And he was in his like late 30s when he died with two small children. And we came out of the theater, and I said to her, because I always do, especially if we've got a length of sobriety, what good have you seen that has come out of the death of your son? And she screamed at me. She screamed at me. She's an atheist. She does not believe in God. And that how could a loving God do to her son what he did? She missed the whole boat. She missed the whole Alcoholics Anonymous program. Because good always comes. We can always see how it comes. It takes time. It never subsides, but it has to go down a little bit to the point where we can see the good in everything, in anything that happens to us. And just like I said earlier, it becomes a gift. You know, she could be sharing her pain with another person who lost their child. And that would help her, you know, because again, in the 12th step, that's what we do. We help another human being. And if we've been through what they've been through, then we know their pain. So, does that answer your question?
And you were also reminding me, I was talking to Francis once, she said, delay isn't a denial.
Yeah, right, absolutely. And that's true. That is true. You can't see the total picture. So we just accept for today, you know, because that's all we have is today. Okay, that was a good question. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Dawn.
Hi.
Beverly. So, is it because you closed the door? Why do you have to wait?
Yeah.
Yes, you closed the door. How long does the door stay closed?
Almost 2 years.
What kind of door is that?
Almost 2 years.
That you reopened.
I reopened it. I did.
Okay.
Almost 2 years. But see, up to that point, I just went on and living my life. I lived by the 12th step. I did everything I was supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. But in that particular instance, the pain was too great. I couldn't take any more pain. And my mother was not in a state of mind to understand that. But when we were away from each other for that almost 2 years, she started to see what I was talking about. And so when I gave her that gift and she called me, it gave her a reason to call me, because my mother's a very proud woman. She would have never just picked up the phone and called me and said, I'm sorry, because she was never sorry. You know?
Did you make any adjustments in your attitude in this time?
Oh, yes, I did. Absolutely, I did. Because I love my mother, and I liked who she became. Every time I was with my mother, it was always criticism. Always, always criticism.
I know the feeling.
Let me tell you what the circumstances were. My sister had a home in Erie, and she and her husband were moving to Corey. Now, we were raised with an alcoholic father, so we never had much. We never had much. And when I got married, my first marriage, my husband and I paid for everything. My mother didn't pay for anything. We always took care of ourselves. But in another case, had a brother who's since passed, the sun set on my brother. And we all knew it. My sister and I both knew it. And she always showed favoritism. The oldest grandchild, my daughter, the oldest daughter was her favorite in my family. My brother's son was the first son, was the favorite in my brother's family, and in my sister's family, her oldest son. And it was very, very, very noticeable. Well, so I'm getting on with my life. I get a divorce, and I get sober, and I buy a house, my very first house. I was so excited. And the AAs came together and had housewarming. And bought me all my lawn furniture for outside, a gang of them, you know. Well, when my sister moved to Cory, her mother-in-law bought her carpeting. She had her whole downstairs carpeted in her second home. My mother couldn't be outdone. So she furnished my sister's living room. Everything, tables, chairs, lamps, couch, everything in the living room. It was beautiful. She came to my housewarming with two plastic tables from Kmart. That did it.
Those are to be discarded after the party, right?
Yeah. Seriously.
Tell my story.
Abby, you remember that. That's what happened. I mean, I just couldn't take it anymore. The hurt was so bad, I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
So, and once we reunited, that never happened again, because there were some instances where I felt as though I got whatever everybody else got, you know, which wasn't a whole lot. It wasn't that. It was just that I knew she loved me, you know. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is David. I'm an alcoholic. Beverly, thank you so much again for being here. You started out, and this is not my question, but you started out talking about emotional balance. And the first thing, as soon as you said that, I go, what's that?
Okay.
I mean, that's something that's probably been lacking my whole life. But there's somebody that's in the room that's very close to me, and they seem almost immune to outside stress or anxiety. God bless them. But you said, and this is something that I dropped the ball on this morning, and was even before it came out of my mouth. But you said, show kindness to those we don't like. And it was during an outpatient recovery session, group therapy, and after things had broken up, I spoke to the counselor. I said, I just don't like her. Of course, it's tough when you're perfect and judgmental and cynical, and so I guess you kind of addressed it, but you know how, man, there's somebody that just rubs you the wrong way, and they're evil. Or at least I perceive it that way. Not that I've ever been that. But you mentioned this, you know, fellow employee or superior, and hey, you just pray for him. I've had that suggested, and I've done that, and that is very helpful.
Yes, it is.
But
you see, you're human, and you're an alcoholic, and we have a predisposition to alcoholism. And so whatever it is inside of you that brings out that feeling is normal for you. And there's nothing you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with you any more than there is anybody else in this room, because we all have those feelings. It's how we deal with them. And the simplest way to deal with them is, number one, I'm sure people in this room have done this, sat down and had a talk with that person, and be honest about how you feel and why you feel that way. And maybe through that, there could develop a friendship, or at least a tolerance for each other. Or the other thing is, just act as if, you know, be kind to them, be nice to them, but you're praying for them every day. And you get yourself a quick, here's what I say. And I say it over and over and over 100 times a day if something's bothering me. And I'll say, praise God, praise your name, Jesus. I can say that 1,000 times a day. But when you're in the right mode, that's what you do. Just over and over and over. He's hearing it. He knows what you're doing. And the peace comes. The peace truly comes. But that's another, you know, that's just another little tool that we can pick up. You know, when I quit smoking, I can't tell you how many times I said that. How many days I said that. How many weeks I said that. And I say it once in a while today for other reasons, you know. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you, Beverly.
Okay, thank you.
Hey,
I'm done, right?
We're done.